I'm going to talk about the heterogeneous Earth, particular the upper mantle discontinuities and depth-dependent small-scale heterogeneity spectra inside the Earth. This is a part of my PhD thesis work, and the collaborators include Thuan Lei and Ruxian Wu, which are my two advisors. With Thuan, I work on mantle discontinuities. With Ruxian, I work on seismic scattering, Gaussian beam modeling migration, and wave equation migration. And Megan Flanagan is also another member in the committee. We work on the mantle discontinuity. Mike Filler from Los Alamos National Laboratory. We look at some issues in seismic wave scattering and the Chuck Mosher. At Conic Phillips, we do some 3D wave imaging for the exploration. Today, the reason I mentioned this is I want to use some techniques and the examples in the oil exploration to solve some problems in the global seismology. The outline is basically, there are two parts. The first is a 3D dimensional upper mantle discontinuity, especially in Tonga subduction zone. And the second one is depth-dependent heterogeneity spectral inversion. The second part is largely a theoretical work, which show promise to invert for the heterogeneity spectra can give you the length scales of those heterogeneities. Here is an image of S-wave tomography. The only information I want to extract from this slice is the Earth is heterogeneous. From this tomography image, we see the blues and the reds, which indicate the fast velocities and the slow velocities inside Earth. And all these heterogeneities are smooth version. So to start these relations with different heterogeneities, I classify the heterogeneity inside Earth into a large-scale heterogeneity and a small-scale heterogeneities. The scales are really with respect to our current observational system. If we have very dense station coverage, the small scale may go down to like 1 kilometer. And for the larger scale heterogeneities, we have a smooth version. It's volumetric heterogeneity. We can use tomography, a travel time tomography, to invert for those velocity structures like those in the Pacific, Africa, and other various places. But we also have sharp discontinuity, which is a discontinuous component of the large-scale heterogeneity, which include various discontinuities from the Earth's surface. People have devoted hundreds of years to study the shape of the Earth, and the MOHO and 400-660 co-mantle boundary. And to study this type of discontinuity, people usually use waveform stacking method and receiver functions. Anne has talked about this, and the migration. I think Alan Lavender has talked about this in the morning. And all this, the approach to solve this or to find those smooth version or sharp version is a deterministic approach. We use tomography in a deterministic way, which gives us a velocity variation, for example, as a function of position x, y, z. And this v can be any attribute of the heterogeneity. It can be a p-wave velocity, s-wave velocity, density, and so on. But we also have another component, which is the small-scale heterogeneities at length scale, tens of kilometers. Usually, we cannot find the position for each individual heterogeneity. We use statistic method. It seems statistics method is the method when you have no method available. And in this approach, usually because we don't know the relative position of the heterogeneities, we lose phase information. which means we only have a power spectral description of the heterogeneities. And those spectra of the depth-dependent velocity heterogeneities can yield important information in these areas. For example, the major element of geochemical element variation, especially their, for example, magnesium content, iron content, and those major elements which influence the seismic velocities. And we also may yield information on the length scales of the convection of the Earth. Sometimes I also go to the field of geochemistry to study some trace element as a complementary to the major element. And today, I'm going to talk about sharp discontinuities and some statistic approach to invert for the depth-dependent heterogeneities. Here is a seismogram. The method we study the mantle discontinuities are we use very deep earthquake inside the slab. For example, in Tonga, that usually that's 500-600 kilometers deep. And we use this underside reflections, which is a reflected wave from the earthquake upgoing to some discontinuity, then you underside reflect that wave back to station. And the pink one is the direct P wave, which is this pulse. And the black one is the surface reflection, which is this pulse. So any discontinuity reflections will appear within that window, indicated by those green areas. If Earth is so simple, I think we are very puzzled about the complexity of the waveforms and the complexity of the structure. If we have a simple structure, we cannot have this complexity in the wave trends. The ultimate goal of seismology is probably to interpret every wiggles in the seismogram. And if these wiggles are really the reflected waves from discontinuity above the source, then we want to ask questions like, where are they from? And people have done mostly 1D stacking to find the global discontinuities. However, beside 410 and 660, or maybe 520, they found down like 120. They are probably it's local, which means they do not show up in global stack. This yield another attribute for those waves, means probably their local structure above the source. So this gives us a hint that we need a local method to invert for those local discontinuities. It's predicted trial time for those discontinuities. Here's the surface reflections for the data we collected from 1963 to 2005. And from 1963 to 1980s, those are mainly hand-digitized data by Thong Lei and his previous student. From 1980 to 2000, we obtained that data set from Scripps, and from 2001 and to now, I collected those data from IRIS. The study area is this area, surrounded by the blue box. You can see this P wave surface reflection is very dense, and S wave, S to P is narrower because the upgoing wave angle for S wave is smaller. This is travel time curve, so we have earthquake at 450 kilometer depth. And all this, I don't know if you can see these curves. They are travel time curves. So for P wave and S wave, they are similar, the paths are similar because Inside Earth, the VPS ratio is really a constant, around 1.8 something. So if we turn Earth inside out, our source will be at the top, and the reflectors will be in the bottom. And the waves starting from the source will be reflected by this yellow, assume it's a real structure. And we have a bunch of stations on the surface to receive those scattered waves. I use Ki indicate the key vector of the incident wave. Ks indicate the key vector of the scattered wave. If you look at this Ks and Ki, we can find a angle bisector, which the B vector will bisect the angle from the source to reflection point and then to receiver. Using this simple geometry, we can mathematically prove the image of the structure is always perpendicular to your bisector B, although the real structure is a dipping structure. We always image a flat structure. The way to study to find the impedance contrast around this discontinuity is by studying the waves in the vicinity of this reflection point. So if we have a if we can calculate the incident wave at the vicinity of this point and the scattered wave at the vicinity of this spot, we can use a simple relationship that incident wave times your reflectivity will give you scattered wave. And you just divide the incident wave from both sides, you will get the reflectivity. So the incident wave is easy to calculate. We know the earthquake location and its magnitude, and its double couple radiation pattern. This information is from Harvard CMT. But the problem is, how do you find a scattered wave in the vicinity of that? We don't have a station there. We have stations here, so the way to do this is to refocus the wave to that scatter by this Kirchhoff depth extrapolation method. And there are numerous ways to form this besides the Kirchhoff depth extrapolation. S is the Earth's surface, and this is the waves received at each station. It's the green function, the gradient with respect to the Earth normal. The imaging condition is simple. We find the incident wave, somehow we can find the scatter wave in the vicinity of that reflector. We divide the two, then we sum over all the frequencies. That's an imaging condition. However, for one earthquake, we have one image. And the final image can be obtained through a stacking of multiple earthquakes. In order to proceed further, I think there are three ingredients of a reflector. We need first find the position of the reflector. We need to find the normal of the reflector, because the reflector has orientation. We also need to know the reflectivity. Here are some basic properties of the wave-medium interaction. This left panel are all the forward scattering waves from P to P, SS, P to S. This panel is all the backscattered wave. You see the forward P to P scatter is only depend on the compressional velocity. S only depend on the shear velocity. The converted wave is depend on the shear property, the density here. But the density is really small. This effect is small because beta over alpha, which is like 1 over 1.8, so this term is really second order. For the backscatter wave, which is the case in this talk, the backscatter P wave depends on impedance contrast. The backscatter S wave, there is a mistake here, is dependent on the shear impedance contrast. And the backscatter P to S or S to P conversion is really a probe to probe the shear property of the medium. the image condition I just presented saying is not enough, because if you have a full aperture over the Earth's surface, you can get that scattered wave in the vicinity of that reflector. However, our observational system is always limited in aperture. Therefore, when we perform the depth extrapolation, we only extrapolate to certain angles. And for different reflectors with different deep angle, the system response to that reflector is different. And the response, we can write the response at, as this CB, B is the dipping vector. So we first form an image in each dipping angle, then we divide, remove that system response, then we finally we sum up all these corrected image to form a final image. The advantage of this has 3 points. First, it can take care of data acquisition aperture effect, which I will show you in example later to illustrate the importance, with probably the most important aspect in seismic imaging. The second one is uneven distribution of the stations. We have many stations in California on the land, but we have sparse stations in the ocean, so this is probably it's important to correct this factor. And also, third, it has better amplitude control of the image. The first example is using Gaussian beam propagation. The Gaussian beam is just a way to extrapolate downward the wave field. So the model is set up in this way. We have four reflectors. It's layered medium. But you see this reflector with different dipping directions. And the sources are from 0 to 10. And the receivers are symmetrically deployed around the source. We have 400 receivers for each shot. And we have total 200 equivalent earthquakes. So that's a very dense sampling region. But when you form an image, not considering the aperture effect or the observational system effect, you will have an image like this. This peak and this trough will act as a strong diffractors. The amplitude of this peak and this trough is not proportional to their impedance contrast. The way to correct this is in the local deep angle domain. You can see after the correction, this amplitude is more uniform. For the second and third reflectors, probably you cannot see much difference. But if we pick the amplitude from the migrated image, we can see this is the before the correction. The first one, even it's close to the source and the receiver, it has large angle of the scattered energy. However, you can see this, it's not a uniform structure. But the impedance contrast across that boundary is constant. For the second and the third, the similar thing happened. But after the correction, you can see them more or less, they are constant, which indicate they have a constant reflectance of the reflector. A second example is the seismic imaging resolution. This is a typical benchmark model. This is the grid number. Okay, the DXDZ is like 80 feet, 24 meters. This is a blue is the salt body, which has very high velocity compared to the sediment surrounded by the salt. If we superimpose these point scatters on two salt model, this is what we get after the imaging. We see the point scatters become horizontal bars. This is due to the aperture effect. Again, if we put 45 degree dipping structures superimposed on that salt model, we still see its horizontal bars. we cannot resolve that. So put this in the context of global seismology, probably we get worse situation in the lower mantle if we use seismic migration, because our earthquakes are usually clustered, or stations are clustered. You have very limited incident angle span and very limited scattered angle span. Therefore, you have very small span of the deep angle. You always image a horizontal structures, which means if there is a scatter in the lower mantle, you use this kind of system to image that, you always have a horizontal structure. Looks like a discontinuity. But it's better in upper mantle because we have this variability in geographic location for the sources. Each source gives you a different incident angle, although the scattered angle will not change too much. But we still have fairly large amount of freedom in the deep vector. Well, I calculate for Tonga earthquake using global stations from 40 degree to 90 degree, this angle can be 20 degree, which is fairly large, which means we can maximally image a reflector has a dipping 20 degree. Here is some result. This is our study region. This is the red line is the trench. The blue line is the 400 depth contour of the subducting slab, and the black line is the 600 kilometer slab contour, depth contour, and the slice is crossed this way. Here is the image in that constant slice. I haven't synchronized my computer with my workstation for a long time, so this mesh, which is this subducting interface, it should be really a flipped. So this mesh is not correct, although the earthquakes, you can see these yellow dots are the earthquakes. But this image is correct. We see a dipping structure in the shallow structure, like from 100 to 150 kilometer. We also see another dipping structure. It seems there is a lens region in this place. We also see some other, like 250, around 300, and 400 discontinuity. I have all three types of wave image, S2P, converted S2S, and the P2P. But I just don't have them on my computer, so I will just show you one slice. And to summarize, we mapped a three-dimensional discontinuity based on these three phases, P2P backscattered, S2P backscattered, S2S backscattered, using a three-dimensional migration. Basically, we found upper mantle is very heterogeneous. Many reflectors, they may have very limited horizontal extent. Reflectors and the scatters exist. The origin of these reflectors may be subduction process related. Compositional and phase boundary is variable explanation because there are hydrous component in the subduction zone, so all these are possible. And these complex structures in the shallow part may give you difficulty to use the 400 topography to interpret the mantle dynamics. Do you still have time? Yeah, actually, I prepared a second part. I think I will not talk about that. The depth-dependent spectral inversion. location of structures? Yeah, there is a, because I use a wavelet which has a large positive and two small side lobes. So usually you see a blue, red, blue type of thing. And the interpretation, I think it's there obviously a rich body of information here. I think I don't have a good sense to interpret all these structures. But for the 300 discontinuity, some people have come up several solutions for that. For example, the quartz coside to stitch white phase transformation and other various processes. But for the shallow structure, I don't know. It seems it's related to the mantle flow. The other day, Peter just showed the mantle flow. The temperature contours seem dipping downward in this way. Yeah, Alan. This is a left-hand system. You're looking to north. This way, the slab going to west. But it, this slab, the position is not correct. I think it's around this place. You can see this back. I don't know. Raining. We actually we investigate that it's not effective filtering, or signal processing filter problem. It's probably real structure there, and you can see from the seismogram the complexity of the seismogram probably can match this complexity in the structure. No, I haven't done that.